Welcome to LSE Limelight from the Beaver Sound, where we unfold the best stories from students around LSE.
With me, Yasmina O'Sullivan.
Today we're speaking with Jason Reed, a second year sociology student, about an article he's recently had published in the iPaper entitled "Why I, a Cisgender Tory Male, State My Pronouns."
So thank you so much for being with us, Jason.
Thank you for having me.
For those who potentially haven't read the article, of which I'm sure there are very few, because it's very interesting, could you summarise the message that you're trying to get across with your piece?
So in the article, I essentially state that I state my pronouns in my social media bios, which might not be something you'd typically expect a Tory to do, and I try to make the point that gender identity is subjective and that cisgender people should be doing everything within our power to make life easier for everyone else, and to normalise the stating of pronouns is a really easy and accessible way to do that.
Very interesting. Can you tell us a little bit about your journey to writing this article and forming this opinion? What led you to think about pronouns? What led you to state your own pronouns?
Well, I'd wanted to write something on the issue of gender for quite a while. It's been sort of swilling around in my brain for a while. But I wasn't sure how to approach it. I wasn't sure what means I could use, what I could actually say to people who have a very traditional conservative view of gender. And then I came across a couple of Twitter threads written by trans and non-binary people who state their pronouns, essentially saying that it would be an enormous help to them if cis people would state their pronouns and normalise stating the way you'd like to be addressed in that way. And that's something that hadn't occurred to me before. I hadn't thought of it that way. I would always defend people who state their pronouns, but it never crossed my mind that I might do it myself. And so more or less the first thing I did was to do that, was to add my pronouns to my bio. And then it occurred to me that that would be a really good way to address the issue in the form of an article, especially when people started to respond to that. Unsurprisingly, a lot of people took issue with it, and I found myself having to try to defend my position in vain and to try to vocalise my rationale behind it and why I felt the need to state my pronouns, even having never been misgendered in my life. And so as I started to vocalise those thoughts, I thought it would be a really good thing to put in an article and to try to reach a wider audience with that argument as well.
Very interesting. So stating your pronouns got a reaction already.
It did.
Yes, actually, using an article is very good. You don't have to repeat your arguments. You can just share a hyperlink.
Exactly.
Well, you've got a very interesting and unique angle. As you state in your very catchy title, you are a cisgender Tory male. So did that factor into your objective with the article? Maybe the recipients that you were really trying to target? Not target isn't the right word, but those who you were trying to speak to directly.
Definitely. I think the article is accessible to everyone, but I definitely had a specific audience in mind when I was writing it. I was aiming for people who would call themselves socially conservative, people who take issue with others stating their pronouns and would definitely never consider stating their pronouns themselves. I wanted to speak specifically to those kind of people and try to open their minds in a way that my mind was opened once upon a time, and try to get them to consider this issue from other people's perspectives and maybe even change the way they see it.
Fascinating. It's a red rag issue, is how you describe it in your article. It's something which brings very intense reactions from many people. Could you break down your thinking on why this is such a controversial issue or gets such intense reaction on the right?
I think this is an issue that, from the right-wing perspective, is easy to caricature. It's easy for public figures to go on TV and say, "I identify as a penguin," and then that becomes a viral clip that gets millions of views online. And I think it's easy to summarise the traditional perspective on the issue. It's easy to say, "Facts don't care about your feelings," or to say, "My view of gender is based on science, not on how people feel." And that's easy for people to wrap their heads around. Whereas the other side of the issue is considerably more complex, because it involves a huge amount of humility, first of all. It involves acknowledging that you don't know anything about this issue, really, you don't know anything about this issue if you are cisgender. And it involves taking the time to consider what other people say and really taking that on board, and I think that's another reason why people aren't willing to engage with it in a way they might engage with other issues.
It's really interesting. In your article, I'm paraphrasing you here, but you say something to the effect that as a cisgender person, you have no ability to really understand the experience of a transgender person, and so don't really have the ability to kind of cast an opinion on it or to decide what is right or wrong, which is a very interesting message, because often one might think that on the right there's kind of, with the idea of freedom of speech and freedom in opinion and expressing your thoughts, there is kind of a right of everyone to have their opinion. So to say that this is an area where you don't really have a right to have an opinion is quite a strong message, and I guess it reacted to quite viscerally. What's your opinion on that and the idea of freedom in your opinion in all areas?
I think a lot of the right is guilty of a fetishization of freedom. I would very much call myself a proponent of freedom, but I think vast swathes of people weaponize it disingenuously in order to try to make out that they're somehow the victims of some great oppression. When somebody suggests that they should state their pronouns, that was the theme of a lot of the Twitter responses in particular, that people were horrified that I should be dictating to them how they behave. And obviously that's a thin veil for the kind of bigotry that this is, that it's a lack of acceptance for other gender identities that are different to their own. But that's the form that objections from the right tend to take.
Moving now on to the writing stage of this article, can you tell us a little bit about what that process was like for you? Obviously this topic is a tricky one. There's a lot of careful language that needs to be used. It's very important and meaningful to many people, so there's, you know, you don't want to get it wrong. What was it like for you writing it? Was it a quick process? Was it a slow process? How was it?
It wasn't fast at all. It took, I'd say, about four or five times as long as some of the other articles I've written. I redrafted it several times because, as you say, the topic is extremely sensitive and you've got to be careful how you approach it, and also because I wanted to make the argument as compelling as possible and as difficult to dismiss as possible for those I was trying to target with it, because I knew that obviously the instinct would be to dismiss it. I also thought it was important to take the time to contact people who know more about this than I do, and I actually sent a draft of the article to the authors of those threads that I was talking about before I sent it off to the editor, just to get their thoughts on it and to make sure that I was sort of on the right track, because I thought that was a really important thing to do. I think it's important to, as I say in the article, to acknowledge your own perspective, and obviously I'm acknowledging my own cisgender privilege here. I know that I don't really understand this issue, and I can never understand this issue, and I'm not speaking to people who know more about it than I do. I'm speaking to people who know less about it than I do because they're unwilling to engage with it.
Very interesting. I've got to congratulate you on your title. It's really packs a punch. I mean, you talk about taglines, it's basically clickbait. Did you write it yourself?
This is, I think, the first time ever that I've written an article where the title is almost exactly what I had in mind. Quite often the editor will change it up and it'll go through multiple different titles, but this one is a simple message, and it's, like you say, it's very clickable. And so yes, essentially I did write the title.
Fascinating. Now let's have a chat about the aftermath of the article's release. What did you think of the reaction that it got on social media? I had a little read of the reaction that was on Facebook. I understand there was more on Twitter. What was your outlook on this?
I found the reaction to be unsurprising. If you'd asked me before the article was published or before I posted it on Facebook who would comment and what they would comment, I could have had a pretty good guess, because I know exactly what... I knew what I was getting into when I posted that. I knew exactly what was coming. Unsurprisingly, a lot of people took issue with it. People started to reel off the same talking points that we've heard 1,000 times before. What was really heartening, though, was what was not public, and a lot of private messages of support that I received afterwards, and people who saw a lot of the comments, some of which were harsher than others, and first of all wanted to make sure that I was all right, which I am, and also expressing their solidarity and their support for the points that I was making.
You took an approach of not engaging with the comments, which I think is probably very wise and mature. Do you think that these comments are useful? Do you think that they are constructive in any way? These, you know, anybody who has social media has seen them at some point. They tend to be these very long comments with brilliant grammar, because this seems to be a competition of ideas, but also grammar. Do you think that this kind of debate is useful?
I think if the debate were more constructive and more open-minded, it would be immensely useful. That's the aim of the article. But this kind of response is never going to be constructive, because it's people who already know what they think about this issue and are never going to reconsider that. And their purpose for commenting is not to try to, is not to engage with the issue. It's not to try to understand better what I'm trying to say. It's to publicly signal that they have the correct view on this, and to express their outrage and be seen to be the voice of rationality. Because if people really did want to engage with this issue, first of all, I don't think you would comment publicly if you took a different perspective. You would ask privately rather than, and you certainly wouldn't attack the author if that was what you were trying to do.
Very interesting. Going back to what you said about a change in yourself and wanting the audience to be those who you have a kind of similarity with, because your angle is very unique in this discussion, how would you describe that person? You referenced before that this was kind of a person that you used to be. Could you tell us a little bit about your personal change or growth or whatever you like to call it, and how that has informed you in writing this article?
So, as I said, the target audience for the article was very much Tories in the traditional sense, and I was speaking quite closely to the person who I would say I used to be. I was trying to get into the minds of people who have an unhelpful approach to this issue, which I think is one that I understand quite well, considering it's a point of view that I used to hold, and it's a point of view that a huge amount of my friends hold. And you know, I've debated this issue with countless people many times before, and so I was trying desperately to get through to that viewpoint and to break through that wall that they have of not being willing to engage with it rationally but instinctively dismissing it.
And what do you think changed for you? What was it that inspired this change from the person that you used to be?
Well, it was a very long journey indeed. That I was brought up in a Christian household. I was brought up with a very socially conservative perspective on things, and for a long time my views on a whole range of issues were not really my views at all. They were received views. I was told that this book contained the ultimate truth, and I'd never considered questioning it. I received my views from sort of prolific Christian commentators rather than thinking about things myself. And then I lost my faith at the age of 17, and I sort of had a watershed moment where I realised I don't know anything about anything, and I realised for the first time ever that it might be valuable to consider other people's perspectives while forming my opinions on issues, and to realise that I'm a drop in the ocean. I don't know everything there is to know, and that goes beyond the issue of gender. You can apply that to any issue at all, to understand that other people have insights that I could never possibly have, and that's what I'm trying to convey in the article. That's the thing that I think if people get their heads around that, everything else sort of falls into place. This isn't about pronouns. This is about perspective, and it's about having the humility to understand the smallness of your own perspective.
Wonderful. For listeners, do you think you could give them a final message? Potentially, if this was the only message they left listening to this podcast with, what would it be?
I would love it if everyone could learn the same lesson that I was lucky enough to learn. Whatever your perspective is on social and political issues, even if you consider yourself to be enlightened already, I would just urge you to consider where your views actually come from. It's unpleasant and it's often really difficult, but I think it's really important to trace back where your opinions came from, how they were formed, because our opinions are formed by our own perspectives and our own experiences, which are not objective truth. They distort the way we see things. And so I think if everyone took the time, you don't have to talk to anyone about it, but just think about it. Think about what you know and what you might actually not know and where you could benefit from other people's insights. That would be infinitely valuable.
Fascinating, Jason. Thank you so much for talking to us.
Thank you.
Everyone should absolutely take the chance to read Jason's new article. The link will be in the description for this podcast. The title is Why I, a Cisgender Tory Male, State My Pronouns, and it's published in the iPaper.
Thanks for listening. We hope you enjoyed the episode.
The interviewee was Jason Reed, and we were talking about his recent article about declaring pronouns.
The fantastic music is by Ashley Lyo Marsing. I have been your host, Yasmina O'Sullivan. If you're interested in getting involved, just check out The Beaver online.